This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Rosalie Hunter.
Brian Hunter.
Pat Hennigan. Jeff Brennan.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Brian, you were talking about your early childhood, and then after your father came back from the Second World War and had recuperated to some extent, you got a state house. So that was another phase of your life.
It was a very exciting stage that we'd come from a house that didn't have many taps or light switches and things, and we walked into this state house that had all these lights in every room and switches in each room that my brother and I ran around turning things on and off until we settled down. But it was good, and so, it was amazing.
So were they much better than the normal houses, or was this a new phase with the state housing?
It wasn't a brand new house. It was about 5 or 6 years old by the time we moved in, but it was the whole street was made up of basically returned soldiers, so there was a commonality in that sense, and all the young children. By this time, Mum was over the moon because she'd had a daughter born, and that was all happened at Rewa, and Mum was so thrilled to have a daughter born. So there were three of us children came to Fielding. Anne was just quite small, but we grew up went straight off to primary school. My brother and I went to Lytton Street School. That was a class at Lytton Street.
There were big classes then. Mm-hmm. And about how many in a class? That was one class. About 40 in the class, maybe even more than that.
I quite counted them, to be honest. But
in the front row.
You got four rows there, yes.
Yeah.
And that time, Dad was, he got work. Part of the rehabilitation of soldiers and wounded soldiers in particular had the opportunity to learn new craft, and he did leather work and he did painting and art. He's always quite good at his art, and it was a natural. He used to do sign writing, so he spent some time and woodwork. It was his other craft that he learnt through the rehab system, and the army set him up with a nice workshop for woodwork stuff, and he would do bits of woodwork, make things for people and do sign writing. And then he got offered a job at Lytton Street School running the office. He learned to type too, taught himself to type. Fairly fast, reasonably tidy typing.
And the old ones, heavy to use, wasn't it?
We had an old auntie that gave us an old clanger typewriter just to shoot things up every time. Okay. Hit the key, but he taught himself to do that. And then he was doing typing for the Lytton Street School headmaster, but it wasn't there long, and Murray Roberts was the stock and station agent that our family had always dealt with for generations, had an office in Fielding, and he was asked to join them and come down and be the office manager. And we didn't have a car or anything at that stage, but we all biked everywhere. And Dad had his bike, and he'd strap his crutches on the bar and bike down to work. One pedal that was fixed. He'd bike down to Murray Roberts, and he just loved it, dealing with farmers again. And Murray Roberts wasn't a place you went and bought your drench or your an individual type of items. It was all bulk handled, and they had a huge liquor license, and so they provided most of the big farms around the district here with their bulk orders of whiskey or gin or beers or whatever. And so that was a big part of their and the selling of the bull and stock. They did all the Hurley sales, went through Murray Roberts, and the phone is early cattle sales. I got the job of going down on the Saturday and cleaning the brass plaque outside. Got 10 shillings for doing that. And vacuuming out the office and cleaning the brass steps. They had a, what do you call it, a brass plate at the door.
A shingle.
And
so was there a tie-up with Levin & Co.? And
well, they were eventually merged.
They did merge, yeah.
And days on. And so that was a great thing for Dad. But
fantastic,
Alec and I, my brother, we got jobs around the town. Alec was always mowing lawns, and I got jobs delivering the Fielding Star and the newspaper.
Did that pay well?
Oh, you got enough to get... it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, fish and chips.
You could take your sixpence over to Millie Pivick's and then get a pack of fish and chips and stuff them down your shirt while you're going around delivering them. Keep you warm. And Mrs. Allen used to run the print, the newspaper office. It was where the beef, you know, you can get the hot roast meals there. In the corner behind the Manchester and Cobbs.
Yes, I know.
It was parked in there, and the bloke in there used to still stamp out the letters to write the, and to make them into lead shapes.
The typesetting.
Yeah, typesetting bloke. He'd still put it all together, and this great machine that clattered away. We could watch that going on. It was quite enjoyed that job. And then but the big job in Fielding was working for Cobbs as a delivery boy, and I got a job there. I'd be about nine then, delivering after school. And
delivering what?
Delivering all the packages and people could buy on APRO.
So Cobbs were, what Cobbs were they
were a big department store.
Okay.
And they were virtually one of the older shops in town. Cobbs and Darrow's are sort of all related and friends from Ireland that set up the big shops in Fielding.
So was there much link into Palmerston North then, or were they quite separate communities?
Quite separate, really. There was a bus would go once or twice a day, and the school kids and some workers. And there were two bus companies, so there must have been work for them both. Rutherford's and Madge's would run the buses back and forwards. One went one way and one went the other. Rutherford's went out through Madge always went through Bunnythorpe and picking up passengers, but... that would be the main source of school kids and workers, early morning workers. You didn't go shopping on the bus very often. But that job for mine at Cobbs was I loved it there. You got a lot of good people, gave a lot of fun.
So there's no restriction on, you were nine when you were doing that?
Oh, it was only
so
before
all these
school,
jobs you get
after
some
school.
Very young people doing.
After school, yes, I went to school.
Yeah.
And, at one stage I had a job before school. The chemist had a shop where the Lotto shop is now. And you go in there and wash the bottles in the morning, put them all to soak. And everything came in bottles, the medicines and stuff. And then clean the big brass scales. He had big brass scales with a face about this round. And you'd clean that.
You're talking about what? Yes. Half a metre, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I go up to school, by that
time. So, were there many people your age doing?
Most kids had a job, so doing something.
Okay.
Yeah, most kids. Mm. Yeah, I heard about the Cobbs job because they got £2 a week, and that was top money.
That would be good.
Yeah, it was great money. And you heard about it, and you thought, and any time you saw the bloke that was doing it, said, "When you finish this job, I want your job." Yeah. So, you were sort of trying to. Get it, by that time I'd actually left Lytton Street School, that was, and I'd changed to Manchester Street School.
Was there a reason for that?
There's always a bit of conflict about that. None thought I was getting mixed up with the wrong kids, and thought it was most of her friends went to Manchester Street. But whether it's fact or fiction, I don't know really.
Looking at the photo here, they don't look too bad.
Well, there was some hard cash ones in there.
Yeah.
But there's also some hard cash ones in the Manchester.
Made to look smart for the school photo.
Yeah, but When you go through them, half the boys aren't here anymore.
Yeah.
Mm. And most of the girls are still about. But anyway.
So a lot would have moved away, you mean? Or,
a lot have moved or died.
Yeah.
Quite a number of the males have died.
Yeah.
That's surprising. Mm. But anyway, working at Cobbs was a good job. And I had that for 3 years, right through into the secondary schooling.
Yeah.
And then I went to Fielding Ag.
So it was huge in my mind. Cobbs always seemed a huge
job. It was, yeah.
And had those wires for sending the change.
Delivered the money back to the cashier in the corner.
Oh, yeah. Not the vacuum tube.
No, not the vacuum. It was on a spring-loaded.
Spring-loaded, was it? Yeah.
Shoot it across on the wire.
I know.
So did things seem to settle down very fast after the war then?
Go back into a routine? Yeah. Yeah, there was no evidence of war then. As a kid, we didn't talk war at all, I don't think. During the war, my grandparents by that time had shifted into Fielding, and we lived with them as well.
Mm.
And Mum had worked in town to help supplement her income.
Mm.
And so there was those ladies who were the Manchester school ladies.
Mm.
And I think that's where, and they were Presbyterian church people, and Mum was always into her church, got strong with it. And so you grew around that community, and it was a pretty tight community. Everything revolved around St. Paul's Church in those days. And that was, what was I going to say?
About the same
group. But the work was good to learn your way around Fielding, and to get to know a lot of people. And there's still a lady over here that's in this. She's quite a bit older than I was. She was one of the pretty girls at the haberdashery counter. We still have a little laugh together, and she calls me the little boy upstairs. But then I was able to work there in the holidays too, and get to work until later on when I got to be in high school. Once you got in the fourth form, you had to go and work on the school farm in the holidays.
The school farm
just over the road here. Okay. The borders run it during.
Oh, is that Fielding Agricultural High
School? Yeah.
Okay.
During the term when the school's in operation, the borders there's two or three out of the ag classes. I'd taken ag. Were on farm duty, whereas our stay boys in any one class, there was only 10% of us, not even that many, were day boys. The rest were all boarders.
Okay.
And so we didn't get to work on the farm, but on the holidays we could get paid for working on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another good job during the holidays. You got to know the blokes you worked with well, and still friends with some of those people. And
that's the experience.
Was. But then when it came to leaving school, I was dead keen to go farming and get a job on a farm or something. But my father, who had said he'd always been a farmer, but got smacked up in the war and couldn't do his farming, he needed to have a trade or something. And not being a natural scholar, but I was good at metalwork and woodwork at school.
Okay.
That was the subjects that I really shone at, so I did a trade and did fitting and turning. Okay. He said, "You get to do your trade."
Was that training here, or going into Palmerston North first?
I had to get a job in Palmerston. I was too slow off the mark to get one in Fielding. All the blokes that got their trade workshops in Fielding were all sons of the people that worked there.
You could do the trade training in Fielding as well, or was that?
Well, there were workshops in Fielding.
They
had apprentices,
but
they were nearly all the sons of the
men
that worked there, or owners.
So there wasn't maybe a bit later than your time, then people going to tech in Palmerston North to learn those sorts of things.
Oh, they had to come to tech too. The tech was in Palmerston.
Yeah,
of a night school, we had to do some tech work.
Okay.
I had to do my trade and go to Palmerston and find a job. There was about five main engineering shops in Palmerston that took took apprentices.
Yeah.
I remember by this time we had a car that we bought a little Morris Minor, and I asked if Mum and Dad would take me over and drive me around.
Okay.
No, you've got to go and get your own job. But at the time, I had quite a row with Dad to say that I'd be miserable to think I've got to go over there and, you know, I don't know these people.
Yeah.
You've got to go and introduce yourself and say, I'm looking for a job, any chance for apprenticeship. But I did, and spent a whole day, in fact, walking around from shop to shop. Dad had helped me on a map and a phone book where they all were.
Gosh.
And so I had to walk between each one and find the boss and ask him. And at the end of the day, I went home and thought, you didn't know what you'd got, but that night got a ring from two of them. I had a choice then to which one I'd go to, and I went to the one that was nearest to us, was on the bus route, basically. And Dad said, when you get your job, I'll come and introduce myself to the, you know, you had to get your job on your own strength, not. And, you know, I was a big kid by then. And I suppose a little bit bolshy in some ways. And so I wasn't, it was just the thought of having to do it, you know, having to face the truth of the matter. But I thought that it was the best decision at that point in time that he made. It was a wise counsel he took.
So where was that job, first job?
Brill & Morgan's, which was Lincoln & Morgan's, turned into. It had been Holman & Kirk's for generations. It was a very old firm. And there's some photos of it somewhere.
So what sort of things were you making when you were
working? Fitting and turning was a bit of everything. You have to do, as against English trades, they do just turning, or they do fitting, or they do machining, where New Zealand trade does it all together. Fitting, turning and machining, machining and welding. And that, and you had to spend a certain amount of time. Well, the first year, all you do is run around and carry bits for everybody else and learn what the spanners are. You had to turn up on your first day with your overalls. You had to buy your own overalls and a crescent.
Now, they talk about tricks and things. Were you asked to get things that didn't exist?
Oh, yes.
Left-handed screwdriver.
Left-handed screwdriver.
For a long wait.
That's right. I remember asked to go and get a left-handed screwdriver. I got halfway down the workshop. That's as bloody as they're having me on. Went back and threw a bucket of water over one of them or something. And one of the blokes, it was. And then he caught me down the pit. He cut me with another bucket of water back again. But no, they were, again, it was a great learning curve. It was a good shop to be in. And there was two apprentices work started together, and which was a little bit unusual. There's usually only been one, and they took on two this year. One bloke was naturally a good welder, and I was more the machinist, and. But in within that, you worked with one journeyman all the time, and the journeyman. He was the bloke that was the tradesman, experienced.
Okay.
Once you become a.
And they call that because they could move around different.
I don't know really.
It's general term.
Once they completed their apprenticeship, they journeyed on to another company. Another company, and they got more experience. They were journeymen.
The blokes that had finished their time were sort of called journeymen.
So how long was the apprenticeship?
10,000 hours.
Okay. And,
which is about 5 years.
Yeah.
And we didn't get many hours of overtime. Occasionally you would if there was a serious breakdown. Because the journeyman I worked with was did all the dairy factories around the district. I was with him most of the time. And a couple of times dairy factories would break down and you'd be there till it got going again. But
so you had to keep a logbook of how many hours you'd done?
Oh, yeah, every day you had to do that. Every day. Okay. The actual hours you've just done was done by the office.
Yeah.
But your day time book.
You recorded it.
Yeah. The old boss, I haven't got that picture, it must be in there.
No, I can't find it.
Right. He was a big man, and he had a great roar, and he'd roar and yell, and, if he yelled out "Big boy," you were just a regular question to be asking you, or give you a job.
Mm.
But if he yelled out "Hunter," you ran because he knew you were in trouble.
Yeah,
you hadn't filled out your time book or your properly, or that he could understand, or whatever.
Yeah,
he'd worked out you're doing a foreigner. We call the jobs you're doing for yourself.
Okay.
We all were doing jobs for ourselves or our mates or whatever.
Okay.
In our spare time, lunch times, and smokers and whatever. But
okay. So was it the sort of, it was almost a hobby for some of you, that type of work you really enjoyed?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's hardly a hobby, but it's a...
But I mean, you're interested, you're motivated to do things.
Mm. It's an interesting work.
Mm.
So you still wanted to go farming, though?
Yeah. As soon as I finished my time.
Yes.
I applied for jobs farming again. And I'd done a bit of farming work in between.
Mm-hmm.
By that time I'd met Rosalie and she came off a farm and I'd get work for with her father and her brother. But
be a good school though to have.
I don't regret it at all.
You had
a lot of blokes. Mm. At the time you thought it was terrible wages, and some friends were getting much bigger wages than I was getting.
Mm.
But it is a good school.
Mm.
A lot of disciplines in it that you don't get, and you see kids today that they just they wreck their tools. They don't look after the tools. Don't know how to even use them.
Mm. Yeah, and, practical science.
Yeah, some of those practical things were really good schools to have. And you don't lose the ability to pull something to bits and not be able to get it back together again.
So you came out of it with your own full set of tools and you could
use those on the
farm and so on.
Yeah. We had a little lathe for a while, but I didn't really use that much. When you've used a big lathe, a little lathe, it's a bit
hopeless. Yeah, toy.
But anyway.
Woodwork, was it?
No woodwork.
No woodwork, all metal.
Virtually all metalwork.
Yeah.
Okay. Very little woodwork.
Yeah.
Okay. And you'd get a chippy in to do that.
Yeah, okay. Was there a status hierarchy with that then, or are they just different?
There's a bit of a status, and the world is sort of a bit of everything, but the machinist, if you can get on the milling machine, he's the sort of the senior apprentice at the time,
mm-hmm.
and or the senior man, you don't dally with them.
Mm.
But it wasn't a place, a workshop of 20-odd men, isn't a place to try and think you're better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Mm.
You'd soon get sorted out in some other way.
So was there a bit of a sort of lad's culture then? A lad's culture?
We had a bit of fun in there.
Yeah.
One of the blokes, the other apprentice that I was with, he was a fairly uppity little bugger. Mm. And he used to be always a bit stroppy. But he was a national champion on a motorbike. With a scramble rider, he got cheeky with me one day, and I picked him up and put him into a 44 gum drum, bum first, so he's stuck there. And there was water in the drum.
Yeah. Right.
And he's still, the last time I saw him, he's still going on about the day he had. And if we'd go out and have a smoke, and we had an outside dunny, we'd go out there to have a smoke. The boss was a smoker, but we weren't allowed to smoke.
Okay.
And he caught smoke drifting out of the vents in the top of it. He stuck the hose in there, and the town supply and the hose, the loose hose, is going around and around and around. And he couldn't get his trousers up for me quick enough before we were sopping wet. So there's that sort of thing.
When we were courting, we'd be down the street, and next thing we'd hear this awful noise coming, and they were bowling
ball bearings
along the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
And I reckon if they'd have hit you, they'd have broken your ankles. They thought it was funny.
Yeah,
we had one fellow that bought a little Fiat Bambina, and he did it all up, and we used to tease him because he was quite a big tall fellow, and we turned his Bambina round in the shed and then put it in boxes. The wheels looked as though they were nearly sitting on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
He races out, jumps into it, and wouldn't go anywhere. So that's sort of fun for us.
Yeah.
He was furious. Took him a week to get over it.
Yeah. There's a lot said now about health and safety in workplaces and elsewhere. Was there much of that?
There's always the health, the safety department. I don't know where they came under. It was the government department that came around, and we had a big killer team that you pull the lever and down and come this great blade about this long and slice off
this long, which is what, about
About a metre long. Might not have been quite a metre, 700.
That was used for cutting
sheets of steel.
Sheet steel, yeah.
And it would cut, quarter inch steel plate and just zoom it off. Mostly it was used for making straps or something. And it was supposed to be covered, but the guards they designed for it would cover it. You'd never get the bit of steel in all around. So it was a bit hopeless. You'd do it to please them and then take it off and work it. And even on a lathe, you would. There was lots of protection I was supposed to cover your things with. I had a. We used to just use a crescent to undo the chuck on the. And you had a left hand thread or something to undo it. And this new lathe had a clutch lever on the top of the gearbox, and I'm taking a chuck off with my crescent in my hand, twisting it off, and somehow I bumped the thing and I drove it round and nearly took my thumb off there, cut it right off, and she was all hanging out I got ripped up by the boss because of being so bloody stupid, but it was it was just how close you could come to doing some real damage.
Were there many accidents?
Not a lot. But there was were an old Cobber Heel, we called him, as the boss. As I say, he could roar, but he was very, he looked after us well. We used to be scared of him in the workshop.
Yeah.
If he caught you, you'd get every step you took, you'd get your boot in the backside all the way up to the office because he had a grubby little office in the corner where he could see everywhere. Or you get, if you're working on a foreigner and you had your back to where he was, we had hearth brushes everywhere for cleaning the machines. They'd come firing across the workshop and hit you in the back. And what are you up to, Hunter? And they'd bellow across the workshop.
You said working on a foreigner, that's you were doing some work for yourself.
Yourself or a friend or something. So there was, part of being an apprentice boy, I think.
But you got fond memories of that time?
Better
than school?
Oh, yeah, much better. Yeah. You got paid. Yeah. Okay. I enjoyed the dairy factory work too, that was good. Yeah. And the old chap.
Dairy factory work?
Yeah, okay. My journeyman was the charge of all the dairy factories.
Oh, okay,
We had the contract for all the dairy factories, and we'd move around. They'd bought him from Berry's Engineering, which was they'd do all the stainless steel work.
Yeah.
And they brought him over there to get this contract. Okay. And then I went along with him to. It was in my middle section of my apprenticeship.
Okay.
And we got on well, and we met all over the show together. Had a Babcock boiler in there, which is a different sort of boiler to usual. It had a shuttle feed and a chimney that went way up, and the choke for the chimney. Normally they're at the bottom where you can turn the. The air, the draft on and off at the bottom, but this one was right at the top. And apprentice boy, it was jammed, straight up and down. And I had to climb up, this had little rungs to climb up this bloody chimney and get to the top and just turn it.
Yeah.
It had number 8 wire guides holding the chimney up.
Yeah.
Well, it was wobbling about.
So about how high was that? Do you know?
I don't know how high it was.
20 feet? Well, it seemed very high.
40 feet, I think.
40 feet.
It was a hell of a high, I know that.
Yeah.
When I got down, I...
And no safety?
No.
Nothing.
And I said to the boss, the big boss, the manager, the owner of the business, don't you ever do that or I'll be off. And I was pretty wound up at the bottom of that when I got off that, this guy I worked with, he was a big powerful man. We were cutting a hole in the concrete wall to put a tank through, and he was holding the chisel up like this, and I was swinging the sledgehammer the blade of the chisel.
A bit risky. Yeah.
And cut a line round.
Yeah.
And I hit him and missed him. I was getting tired to see it.
Yeah.
And hit him on the forearm. And he hung his hand. Told me my pedigree for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then he said, "You hold it. Now I'll hit it."
Oh, no.
So we didn't get anybody hurt again. But I still remember that. But you felt sorry for him. Could have broken his forearm.
Yeah. And you thought he might try and get his own back.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.